Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, guys, welcome back to Rick Shields Golf Show podcast, episode 151. We're flying through.
Nice.
This podcast has also been sponsored by the Duke's St. Andrews, a wonderful golf course, just 10 minutes away from the town of St. Andrews. I was actually up there this weekend. I stayed at the Old Course Hotel.
Standard.
Which is pretty, pretty amazing. It's such a different place now after the Open. Mm. Like, it's only a few months after. Yeah, it just looks totally different. But I went up to the Duke's, met some friends up there. They actually played the golf course. Couldn't speak highly enough of the place. And I sat up there in the clubhouse, which overlooks the entire golf course. If you don't know about the Duke's, obviously there's loads of golf courses in St. Andrews, but the Duke's is a Heathland golf course, and it's definitely worth playing. They also have memberships there, open for hosting golf days, and the food up there was magnificent.
What did you have?
Unbelievable. I actually had fish and chips.
Standard.
It was really... I'm actually going to call it fish and chips, but it's more like whale and chips.
Talk to me about sauces. What's your vibe with the fish and chips?
I don't go tartar.
Okay.
It comes as standard, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Tartar, lemon on the side.
You're
it's
pure
not for
catch,
me.
Aren't you?
Ketchup, bit of salt, bit of vinegar, ketchup, and I just tucked in, overlooking... The windows were at the front. It was a beautiful day on Friday when I was up there. Overlooking St. Andrews. You can see the bay. You can see the I think it's the 9th and 18th hole that actually comes right up to the clubhouse. Thoroughly enjoyed it.
Were you ketchup on the chips or at the side dunkable? I can't think what you do normally.
In private,
yeah,
I'm all over.
Yeah.
In public, I'm a little bit more on the side.
Of a dunker. Yeah. I like a dunk though, because you get more on it.
I just feel like sometimes if you spread ketchup all the way over the chips and the fish, which is what I deep down want to do.
Yeah.
I feel like I'd be judged.
I feel like that's a bit more of a vibe, like a greasy spoon, isn't it? You yeah. Put it all over and you're like slobbering, it's all stuck in your beard. Yeah. But not anyway. Really something for the Duke's clubhouse vibe, that is it?
No, it's
but
not.
But that's all well and good, but if I want to learn more about the Duke's golf club, what do I do?
Jump over to thedukescourse.co.uk. We'll put all the links in the YouTube video and also on the podcast. There's memberships available. There's also a Scottish golf rate if you live in Scotland. And if you want to find out more about hosting a fantastic golf day at the Duke's, go and check it out. 10 minutes away from town. You can link it up with a few different golf courses while you're there. Night out in St. Andrews, a few scoops, and jobs are good.
I'm sold. Can we do this quickly so I can go out get in my car and go straight to the Duke's? Because you've sold it to me. Thanks to the Duke's. Nice.
Definitely worth checking out. Maybe a break 75 in the future. Who knows?
I'd like that. Today is an action-packed podcast.
Yes.
And it's one of those where we ask for emails a lot. And if you want to send an email, it's podcast@rickshields.com. Simple. We've had some really good ones. And I've got two fantastic emails. And we've had loads of good Facebook questions, which is always good. But I wanted to start off with a question for you.
Okay.
Okay.
Fire away. We normally do questions at the end, but let's go.
This is a question from me to you.
Oh, okay.
So it's a bit loaded, right? And I've got a reason why I'm going to ask it you. But basically, on Saturday, I went to Trafford Golf Centre. That's okay. No surprise. Yep. I'm there most Saturdays.
Most Saturdays.
And I was meeting a
Utilizing
friend.
Utilising the black card.
Absolutely. Just smashing the black 120 balls. And I get there, just start throwing them out of the range. I hit about 50, and the last seven, just launch them. And then what I do then is I look at people who just paid for balls and go, watch this, and throw mine off and laugh at them.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what I do. But no, jokes aside. I met with an old friend, Ben, who we used to be... really good friends at the golf club when we were growing up.
Yeah.
And we went on a trip to the Open at St. Andrews 2005. Went to Centre Park a few times. We were like best buds growing up. And we don't see each other as much now, which is a silly, really. We should do, but we do keep in touch. And he asked me about going hitting some balls on Saturday. I was like, yeah, let's go Trafford. I'll card it up.
Okay.
But the benefit of being friends with Ben is not only was he just a friend, his parents own a bakery. So he brought me two pies, meat and potato pies.
Very nice.
So my plan was range with him, then to the gym.
Okay.
In reality, it was range with him, pie in the car, pie when I got home, no gym. But what's good about Ben is he used to be a hardcore golfer like me. We were obsessed. 2004-05 was our era. Think about Lindbergh back in the day.
100%.
Boxing Day, I think 2004. Christmas Day, 2004, his parents went big on him for Lindbergh. Boxing Day, we played golf. I was so jealous.
He was wearing sweatbands.
Sweatbands
on the 26th of December.
Absolutely he was.
Completely not what he should have been wearing.
No need.
But he wanted to show off his new JL.
And all I had was one poxy Lindbergh belt and he had the full outfit. I was so jealous of him at the time. But anyway, we went to the range. Now, what's great about seeing him is his golf bag has not changed since the glory years.
Oh, my goodness.
So he's pretty much got all the clubs he had when we were hardcore juniors, right?
Wow.
Pink crazy putter.
Please tell me you turned up in full JL as well.
He did. It's really weird.
Same clothes that he had on.
A bag full of pies under Lindbergh. But we're hitting balls. It was that good thing what we sometimes do at the range where there's two of you. And like, there's top tracer on. Yeah, great. Yeah. We're looking at a bit of numbers. But it's like, hit five or six, swap over, little debate, little chat, little kind of monster. You know the drill. Yeah, you know the vibe. That's your vibe, isn't it?
Was it early?
About a little half tenner.
All right.
Yeah, it was half tenner.
Quite late for you.
Yeah, I'm normally there earlier. Anyway, his driver, see if you remember this one. So his driver was actually, he's probably his most recent club, weirdly, out of his bag. And TaylorMade, R9, super deep, TP.
Don't. It's filth.
One of the, I'm going to say it, sexiest, if you want to bleep that out, you have to, sexiest golf clubs you've ever seen in your life,
This podcast has just become X-rated. Just become 18 only.
Right. And he was hitting it, right?
What did it sound like?
Nice.
Did it look small?
Yes and no. It's small in a sense that it's not obviously, it doesn't look as wide, but it's deep, hence the name super deep.
Well, if you are watching this podcast, we'll put an image on. If you're listening, jump over to the YouTube channel so you'll see the image.
Yes. And it launched in 2010, so it's 12 years old now.
My goodness.
And he was hitting it, and he was getting about like, his best ones, good ones, like 160 ball speed. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's good, hit. And I went, oh, have a go with my driver. I've got the Ping G425 Max. To me, the best driver since sliced bread, right? He hit mine.
But what when Ben put that club down behind the ball,
it
was
looked
there any,
like it was massive.
I was
right? going
to say, did he give any feedback
like,
straight away?
Yeah, he says that looks huge. Okay, looks like a frying pan vibe. Yeah.
Which is what I felt like we said almost every year growing up as a kid.
Because they got bigger, didn't they?
But every year, drivers got bigger.
Remember the Hippo Giant 400cc?
I do.
That was massive.
The one that I always remember being, and this was very very early on, and I've seen this driver ever since. The biggest Big Bertha.
Yeah.
Callaway's
like
biggest Big Bertha. And I remember at the time, I was thinking it was a joke golf club.
Well, this very much links to where this story's going. You're on the right tracks here. So he hit my driver. And even though this is weird, I obviously don't work for Ping. I don't endorse Ping products. I was hoping he was going to hit it and go, I love that. I don't know why. You know when you've got something of yours? I don't know why that is. I was just hoping he was going
to
smash it.
And to some degree, you want to see, you're hopefully you're proud of golf and the development it's done and the innovation. You want the latest and greatest to outperform 20-year driver.
Exactly.
But
it didn't. So we hit my driver. Obviously, it was louder. It was bigger. And this is only a very simple kind of story. It wasn't obviously backed up with loads of other data. But long story short, he was hitting my one. And again, his best one was like 160 ball speed. And his all right one's like mid-150s. And I was thinking, this driver is a top-of-the-range current driver. His one was a great driver. It's 12 years old. Not a lot's changed, has it?
No.
Now, you could go down the route, oh, yeah, but the new ones are more forgiving on your off-sends of hits and all that boring stuff. But for Ben, who's kind of semi-getting back into golf, what's the incentive there for him to go and buy a new driver? So my question for you really is, and it's a very loaded one, there's lots of different stories, but a bit of a talking point for today, and we want to hear your comments as well. So if you're listening, send us an email, podcast@rickshields.com. If you're watching, get in those comments now. Are new golf clubs a bit of a waste of money?
It's a great question.
And we're around new release season as well.
It's coming up very, very soon.
Very,
very close. Well, yeah, it certainly feels like we've got to a point right now in time. And maybe we've been delusional in this point might have come 10 years ago or 5 years ago. Products aren't as exciting and aren't changing as much. Nowhere near the speed of the early 2000s, and back in the 1990s, early 2000s. Every single product launch was different. It was new. Every time they were pushing the boundaries. And at that point, they were nowhere near the boundary of performance, like the governing bodies and everything, all this. bar the illegal drivers that became illegal. Do you remember the ones with the hot faces? But like I say, it's got to a point now where a lot of the new drivers are starting to be leaked. I've seen images of new Pings. I've seen images of new Cobra. Obviously, new Titleist drivers are out. And I'm just like, yeah, somewhat similar story to you, but only on a tweet. I got a tweet from a guy this morning, actually. Pask Boy, at Pask Boy. Hey, Rick, new golfer here. My dad gave me his old set. Would these be best to use, or are they bad clubs? And basically, sent me images. It's a Titleist Titanium 983K.
I had it myself.
I mean, how good is that driver? He had tailor-made burner irons, the one with the almost, the face looked curved, even though they weren't.
Right.
I'll show you images in a minute. He had some, like, ultra wedges, and he had a Rosser Monza putter.
Oh, yes.
You know, the triangle
yes,
one.
Yes, I do.
So I sent him a message back, because he's asking me, are these bad? Should I not be using these? He had a couple of Adam Titleist 3-wood and 5-wood.
Again, very good.
Which looks amazing. I just said, these were amazing clubs in the early 2000s. They're still really good
unbelievable
now.
And I think that's the thing. It's like, again, it's a bit of a silly question, it's more just to spark the debate and get different kind of thoughts. But you know, if Ben wanted to go out and say, right, I'm getting back into golf, I fancy a new driver, just because I work hard, I want to get myself a nice new driver or whatever, and that then maybe slightly inspires him to go the range a bit more because he wants to try his new golf club, and then in turn he gets better at golf because he's hitting more golf balls, it makes sense. Or equally, and obviously, if you've got clubs that you've been handed that are fitted for a 6'5" person and you're 5'5", they're not going to be ideal for you. But it just did get me thinking. I think we talk this sometimes, it's not something new, we've had this conversation before, but when you actually see it in real life and you take away like the glitz of a commercial or anything like that, and you actually see someone in real life on a bit of a cold morning in Manchester, and they're whacking a driver that's 12 years old, and then equally whacking a driver that's essentially the current line, and there's literally little to no difference. It does make you think, actually, we are sometimes fools, aren't we, getting sucked into these stories by brands.
I've been much less inclined to swap golf clubs this year.
Mm-hmm. You've not, have you really? Driver?
A putter on that now and again, dabble, but I've had the driver in the bag for a long time. Obviously, my 3-wood forever. My irons for plenty of time now. Yeah. My wedges forever. I don't know. I just, nothing is coming out. And I'm very fortunate. I'm in a really strong position where if I wanted to test a club, I could do maybe put it in the bag. I'm not even that arsed.
I know why it is. And it sounds weird. I think I know why it is. Because this year, and maybe some of last year, you've actually played more golf than ever with Break 75s.
Yeah.
And I think the same. My club's obviously very good, but they're not like, I've got an old version of irons. There's a newer version of the Titleist irons that I've got that I've not got or anything like that. But well, I think when you're playing more golf, you actually realise that it's you that hits. It sounds obvious, but it's you that hits the bad shots.
Definitely.
If you duff a chip, you know it's not your Vokey's fault, is it? If I hit a driver out of bounds, I know it's me and not the driver. But maybe a couple of years previous, when you were testing more clubs and actually playing as much, you were almost getting sucked into it.
Tricking myself.
Well, yeah, because you were reviewing so much stuff. And you're like, right, today we're reviewing X club. They claim it's longer, da-da-da. Even if you don't prove that correct and you know it's not correct, you still probably get a little bit sucked into it.
100%.
On the golf course, you don't.
No, and also, there's enough track record in those golf clubs of good shots I've hit.
Yeah, that's true.
I know I can hit those clubs really good.
I wonder then, on that note, if when people go for a fitting, you go into a simulator, you hit good shots, you hit bad shots may get deleted, potentially, which is sometimes there's some merit behind that. Because, if you top one with a new driver that you don't do very often, there's no point in that skewing your results. But if you got given, I know you can't really do this, but given the finished article and said, right, Rick, you got fitted for an 8.5 degree extra stiff, Titleist TSR, here it is. And then before you actually paid for it, you went and played 18 holes.
Mm.
I wonder if that would actually sometimes sway people away, because you go,
definitely,
first tee, oh, that's a slice out of bounds. Fourth hole, snap hook. You actually think, oh, why am I wasting £550 on this?
I'd love there to be a system where you almost got fitted while playing golf.
That would be class.
Do you know, your golf clubs can almost measure everything. And at the end, it prints off like a prescription to go, okay, after, maybe it's not, maybe one round's not enough, maybe a couple of rounds. We've noticed X, Y, and Z. And because of this, we believe you need this length of club, this lie, you're missing a shot that goes 110 yards. You're missing around the green. Every time you tried to use your sand wedge out of the bunker, you failed, where your lob wedge was much better. Like, I feel like if it gave you almost a coach within your golf clubs, like the golf industry could boom on that. It really could.
And I think that's the thing. They're definitely not saying people shouldn't go out and buy new golf clubs, because if you want them and you work hard, or there's something you just really want to get it. And it just, it can be. I think most of us, when we're growing up, we become like kids again when you get a new shiny golf club, don't you? And I remember growing up getting like an Odyssey 2 ball and almost taking it to bed with me and cleaning it all the time.
I have slept with golf clubs in the past.
Let's just soundbite that, please.
I have slept with golf clubs 100% without even a question. I have. Without even a question. And I see it now.
That was at the Duke's course this weekend.
Because sometimes I feel like I see it with my kids now, when they get a new toy, the best thing in the world.
Absolutely.
At that moment in time. And when I got golf clubs as a kid, it was the best thing in the world at that time.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't want to part ways with it. I would bath it. I would, you know, I'd do everything with it. I can imagine these like little scenes, like going on a roller coaster with her and having a romantic meal opposite my Callaway Steelhead driver.
Going for an eye test, Mr. Shields. Next to you walking, Rick, why have you got a set of golf clubs with you? Just because I don't want to leave them anywhere.
Taking them into school and smooching with them in the corner. But yeah, it's like that's a love affair. And this was a very interesting range night. I know we spoke about it a couple of weeks ago when it happened. I was fascinated about looking at golf clubs, what people had in the bags.
I love it.
I was fascinated. And you know what caught my eye more than anything? The old ones.
There's something about memories as well, isn't there? And takes you back. But yeah, I agree.
I feel very fortunate we grew up in a time, playing as kids, where I feel like we had the biggest burst of evolution in
Absolutely.
The golf industry.
Graphite shafts, titanium heads.
And all those memories just come flooding back. Every time you see like an old Scotty Cameron or an old... Do you remember that guy? I wanted to buy all of them. He had like... Oh, what was it now? Was it D? 975D. And he had the tight list.
Was it a PT fairway did he have? I can't remember.
No, I think he had all matching. Driver 3-wood and 5-wood. And that's the club I want to hit. I don't want to hit the guy who had the Nike Sasquatch square driver. I needed to hit that driver. Again, that's maybe a more walked down memory lane and not a true reflection of the golf industry. But it's something fascinating about these golf equipments that are from yesteryear.
Well, it's a little bit similar when we were speaking to Richard Hammond, maybe on podcast and also off podcast in kind of more real life, if you like. We asked him what cars he's got, and most of them we didn't have a clue what they were because like old retro things. He's
Correct.
Not getting that excited about a new Range Rover or whatever it might be. It's probably like you with golf clubs. You've had access to every golf club. So if someone walked in now with a set of brand new TaylorMade, you'd be like, oh, nice golf clubs. But if someone came in with a set of TaylorMade 15 years ago and they got some RAC rack irons or whatever, and you're thinking, oh, I want to have a go with them again. But that's it. If you want to buy new golf clubs, do. Absolutely do. It's fun. It's exciting. There's nothing better than taking that wrapper off for the first time and skying your driver. But it's something that don't expect to get suddenly amazing at golf by owning new shiny sticks.
I think this is almost a concrete, definitive end of sentence. Golf is really, really hard.
Yeah.
Saw something over the weekend. It was a Monday qualifier, and it was, I believe it was 3 rounds of golf. And this one particular player.
I know, I've seen this.
Have you seen this? Played the front nine under par all week.
Yeah.
Okay. Played the back nine under par all week. Played the par threes under par all week. Par fours under par all week. Par fives under par all week. Made one bogey, one out of 3 rounds of golf, or maybe even four. It was four, sorry, 4 rounds of golf. Made one bogey, and he's heading home after missing the cut at first stage qualifier.
That's insane.
Get this as well. This is mad. I thought, this mustn't be, what? It's a par 72, 7,267 yards, a monster of a golf course. Average par three length was 209 yards.
Oh my God.
The longest was 227. The shortest was 190. Average par four length, 420 yards. That's almost the hardest par four at every golf course locally that
that's
we know.
Insane.
That's the average. And the par five average was 558 yards. And this particular gentleman, I actually don't know if it ever disclosed his name. I'm sure I can find out. I'm sure people will know. He had one bogey all week. And shot.
How did he miss out by then?
Must only have been a couple. Like I said, I kind of only saw the tweet and didn't really follow the full story. But I thought, I've got to talk about this in the podcast. How the hell? And then, I didn't watch loads of golf this weekend. No. It was the President's Cup, USA versus International. It kind of doesn't include, obviously, Europe. So I'm not that, wasn't that bothered. I've kind of watched little bits. I also watched a little bit of DP World Tour, the final round. I always get his name wrong.
Guido.
Guido. Guido's easier than his surname, isn't it?
I think, I'm sure that's Guy in Italian.
Is it?
I think it is.
He's a baller. His final round, he had like 9 birdies. And birdied the 18th hole at Le Golf National, the French course where it hosted the Ryder Cup, which nobody birdied all day. He hit this 35-yard cut into the back right pin position, knocked it in for birdie to set a clubhouse lead of 16 under, which Rasmus couldn't catch up. How? He had 5 birdies in a row at one point. How?
You know what I think's mad about...
Oh, he's so good.
Well, this is the thing, right? So when you've got to look at the levels of golfers, everyone that's got the guy at their golf club who's a scratch golfer who just seems amazing. And scratch golf, obviously, is a very, very good level of golf, of course it is. But you look at that guy you just mentioned a minute ago who was going for like a tour qualifier, missed out, and he's going ridiculous under par. So you think about how good you have to be to get on tour, right? That's just unbelievably good golf. It is. We've seen James Robinson, our friend, many a time, and you watch him and think, how are you not on tour still? And he was like... Don Ison says, I wasn't good enough.
Yep.
So you think you have to be so good to get on tour, clearly. Then you have to be a certain level of elite golfer to even get the certain level of tour card to be in the bigger events. Then you have to make the cut, which again, you've got all these guys who are amazing golfers. A lot of them are going to be in form. You've got to make the cut.
Guido was 10 shots back when he made the cut.
It's insane. And then to go on and win, the person, sounds such an obvious statement, but the person that wins each week on tour is playing a level of golf that is just absolutely mind-boggling, isn't it?
I mean, that Rasmus Højgaard, I almost wanted him to win because you see on the third day he took an 8 on a par 3, and I don't believe a winner has ever, they've never had a winner that's had a 5 over on one hole and still won.
It's insane. The only thing that kind of upsets me a bit about this sometimes is, though, when you look at like athletes, like the marathon, there's that, I always get his name wrong.
Oh, didn't he set a new record this weekend?
Kipchoge, I can say his surname, Kipchoge. He did like 2:01 maybe in a marathon. He has done less than 2 hours, but it was unofficial. So he's done a marathon in 2 hours. Now, I do a little bit of running, as do you. Although I can't even dream of how hard that must be, I can almost imagine how far I can do in 2 hours, and it obviously would be nowhere near that, right? So you can kind of somewhat get an understanding. But when you see these guys shooting scores at a golf course that you've never played, you know, with certain tees that you can't even imagine of, with pin positions, with thick rough, with crowds, with pressure... you really can't comprehend what it's like, can you?
And I think that's why our series with 10-shot challenge against a tour pro has been so successful. Because as much as, I've not always played the greatest in those matches, it just gives you a sense of these guys. And to be honest, neither has Tommy, Lee Westwood or Adam Scott. They've not completely burnt the golf course up when I played them. But they comfortably beat me 10 shots in one round of golf. This is 4 rounds of golf a tournament, or 3 in live. Like, what the hell? Didn't you say you watched a running video, though, of a guy who was on a treadmill at the speed?
This is insane, right? So there's a guy, I watched the YouTube video of him. He's like the Rick Shields of running, and he's a good runner. He can run a 5K.
He might not be the Rick Shields of running.
He can run a 5K, which is 3.11 miles, in, I think, 15 minutes 30, which is like
absolutely.
I think the world record's 12-something, so he's a super elite runner. And he set up a treadmill at the pace that Kipchoge runs a marathon at, so around the 2-hour pace. He was like, right, I'm going to run on this treadmill for as long as I can. And he said, I'm actually going to put it up a little bit faster because it's on a treadmill, there's no wind resistance. Yeah. So this little, you put it up like 0.3 of a kilometre faster an hour or whatever it was, or something, so that it kind of equaled out exactly the same characteristics that Kipchoge runs at. Now, Kipchoge runs for 2 hours at this pace. This guy, a super, super, super elite athlete, could do 10 minutes. Like, honest to God, Kipchoge's running pace is what I do sprints on the treadmill at, like 20 seconds, and I'm literally blowing.
And he's doing 2 hours at that speed.
It's unbelievable, isn't it?
What is it in kilometres or miles per hour, do you know?
So kilometres an hour, I think it's around 22, 23 kilometres
an hour. I mean, most treadmills don't go that fast.
It might be a tiny bit slower, but it's along those lines. It's incredibly fast.
What the hell?
For 2 hours.
Do you know what scares me even more? The new crop of golfer. Even better.
I know.
Did you see this weekend, Charlie Woods?
No, I didn't see this.
Shot a career low 68. Okay, now I don't know the length of the golf course. It was a par 72. It was in Orlando. And he was playing in the Nota Begay qualifier. Okay. Dad's on the bag.
How did I miss this?
T-Dub's on the bag. And Charlie Woods goes round and shoots 4 under par, including an eagle, and near Albatross. I'd love to know how long the golf course is, because I don't actually know, but it's his new... He did a post-round interview. He's so much like his dad. It's ridiculous.
Do you think it's right, this level of attention, or not? Because how old is he? Like 14 or something?
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of scrutiny. Do you remember watching that Netflix documentary, The Short Game?
Yeah.
It's been going on for years, this. Certainly in America, that outrageously elite level of scrutiny and professionalism and competition for these young kids. And that's really hard. You throw in then the mix that your bloody dad is Tiger Woods. Yeah, I mean, what? How does... I mean, he's so confident. It's outrageous. I mean, does it give you confidence that Tiger Woods is your dad? Or does it... I think it would mess with my head, personally.
Yeah, it's a very tough one, isn't it? I think the only thing that is interesting is if he's as passionate about golf as he appears to be, with the facilities he'll have at home, with his dad's expertise, with obviously getting any golf clubs in the world that he wants fitted for him perfectly, you think he's in the best position ever. But then equally, you think, does some lad or girl who comes from nothing, do they have even more drive, like, potentially? It's insane. But it is a very... I very much love seeing things about Charlie Woods and hearing the stories, because it's fascinating that the best golfer of all time, son, is potentially going to go the same way. But you do wonder, long-term, is it going to have any impact on him being under such kind of scrutiny and being in the, you know, being so well known at such a young age?
I mean, like I say, I will maybe try and link it, but I'll show you that on the phone. He did like a post-round interview with like this kind of presenter, and like he's on the putting green there with his dad's caddying, and his dad decided not to go President's Cup and watch and spectate, to go and obviously caddy for his son.
That's insane. I was talking about you last night. Speaking about you
again.
Yeah, I was. Oh. So yesterday, Sunday,
okay,
I went to Anfield.
Oh yeah.
And I was watching Liverpool women versus Everton women in the derby.
Oh nice.
At Anfield. It's really good.
Good match.
Liverpool got beat. Oh. Destroyed. Oh. I think it was either 3-0 or 4-0. Everton was so good.
Who's the actual better team against them?
I think it is Everton. Everton was so much better. But basically my niece started doing football training.
Yeah.
It was really cool. I didn't know this, I don't have children yet, but like, girls' football in England is getting so much more popular.
Massive.
Like, really, like, I think it's literally, at primary school age, it's borderline 50-50.
Yeah, literally, I went out in the garden with my girls last night, and I take my boy, football in the morning, Saturday morning, because he's shown the most interest and really wants to do it. And there's no girls in the class, it's only boys. I take my girls dancing in the afternoon, there's no boys in the class, only girls.
Yeah,
but at school...
Yeah.
We played in the garden last night a little bit of football. My girls know how to stop it, how to pass, how to run. They kept shouting, "I'm free, I'm free." Like they know a bit of the lingo already.
Well, they watch you watching the match. True. You're a hardcore fan. So my little niece has gone to like football training. And what's really cool is her, she doesn't play for the team, but she goes training. They got a lot of free tickets to go to Anfield. So like, obviously the parents could get a load. So my brother got four. So my brother, my little niece, me and my dad went to the match, right? And obviously, because all the little kids from the team are those people that my brother kind of knew of sat around us. Anyway, long story short, this is going somewhere. There was a kind of middle-aged older bloke walking up there at half-time, kind of back up the stairs, who my dad knew, who lives near where my dad used to live, blah, blah, blah. So we came over having a chat, and I had his grandson with him, who was 11, right? And he was kind of really smiling at me a lot. I was like, "Hiya, mate." And he went, "Hiya." And I was like, "Good match." He went, "Yeah." And he was just looking at me and he went, "I played golf today at Huffwood." Now that's my home golf course. So
that was his signal to you.
Yeah. I said, "All right." I said, "Do you watch Rick's videos?" He went, "Yeah." And basically for the next second half, we were talking about golf all the way.
Oh, bless
about
him.
What's in his bag, the videos, the good videos. So his name was Shay. I said, "Right, Shay. You got to get a picture." He went, "Yeah. So we've got a picture." I said, "We'll talk about this in the podcast tomorrow."
Oh, bless
him. And then on the way out, we were walking to the car. We must have parked near each other. We were walking out together for ages. And he was asking about this at the end. And at one point he went, "What's Rick really like off camera?"
Oh, you told him the truth.
I told him the absolute truth. Oh. No, I said he's exactly never watch the again. Same. And then he had a question that really intrigued me. He said, "When you finish the podcast, you take your headphones off. What do you do then?"
Oh, what an interesting question.
Yeah, it was. I said, "Well, what we do then, if you normally say, what a load of trash that was, don't we?"
we'll say to Matt, "Are we even using that?"
Yeah, that's what we say. And then I said,
Matt, like, shows who Matt edits all the podcast, he kind of sends the signal like, "Nah, lads, it was not terrible. Let's do it again."
But yeah, I was just interested. That you never know where you're going to be when you'll meet a Rick Shields fan.
Oh, that's so nice. You're always going to...
Yeah.
Well, thanks for watching, Shay. Really appreciate it. Was he a Liverpool fan, though?
I think he was in a Liverpool hat on. So yeah, he asked what team you support. And then he said his really funny thing as well, actually. One more thing he said. He gave you a little burn, which is hilarious. Well, his dad would give you a little burn. I think his dad's a good golfer. I think he's off one. He wasn't there, his dad, but he's a good golfer. And I can't remember if he said they have a membership at Conway or they just play at Conway sometimes. But anyway, and you play at Conway. And he said, what's the hole that you...
14.
Yeah, he said, they got to the 14th the other day. And after walking down to the green, his dad said to him, why didn't you have a look for Rick's ball? And then Shea went, couldn't. Both of his balls.
They are lost and gone forever.
They are.
You're never going to find those. I mean, it was a really interesting weekend for golf. Obviously, they had DP World Tour, we talked about a little bit. President's Cup, we didn't see loads of. But also, there was another big event.
Golf. Okay.
Yeah. I saw this on Twitter, and it's really interesting at the moment. There's lots of talk about money in golf, isn't there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Ruling the show. It's all about money, how much people are getting paid, and this, that, and the other. I saw a tweet about a professional golfer complaining about how much money.
They've won too much?
No, they've not won enough.
All right, okay.
Okay. Now, this was an event, a local event, PGA North Region.
Oh, wow.
Okay. But why I'm bringing this story up is I almost want to show the world, and certainly people listening, that I feel like golf at the moment, and I've said this a lot of time on the podcast, getting a bad rap for how much money is being lavished around, you know, DJ winning 4 million and da da da. It's like all millions and millions and millions. Peter Scott put on, so after 2 days battling around Bolton Old Links Golf Course, okay, in Lancashire, I finished 20th. Okay.
Out of how many?
But out of 20th, okay? I finished 20th. To win a grand total of £115, okay? Entry fee was £100, and petrol there and back from Southport for 2 days all ended up losing money. Yeah, I know I should have played better, but do you think this is acceptable? First place got £1,100. It got me thinking, what professionals who are competing at a more local level, how are they going to be incentivized or be motivated to kind of play in stuff like this? Like, is it the fact that should money basically be coming from the top and filtering down into all level of professional golf, or will professional golf like this die off at some point soon? I feel like it'll die off pretty soon. So I don't think golf pros are going to be playing for such small amounts of money when they're seeing all these big, big pros playing for shed loads of money.
Yeah, I'm going to try to digest it and come up with my conclusion on this. I think the strange thing is, you know when you enter these tournaments what the prize money is.
True.
So if you weren't happy with it and the petrol money was going to do your head in and taking hours out of the pro shop or whatever he might do with his other full-time job, well, if it's not going to... It's your risk, isn't it? It's literally a risk. So
almost like a gamble.
Well, yeah, I'm sure you wouldn't be saying if you won 1,200, would you say it was 1,200 quid? 1,100
quid
first place, that would have been quite good.
Yeah.
So no, it's not as simple as saying play better, but I suppose if you're entering a tournament and you know what the prizes is, it's not like it's, I'd very much doubt with the North Region stuff, it's a hidden prize pot, and then at the end you find out. It will be the same most weeks, I guess.
Yeah.
And you know, without being rude, a little bit brutal about it, but the reason the prize pots are so short is because there's not much sponsor involvement, because why would they? It's not televised, obviously. You don't get spectators, or you might get a couple of people caddying potentially.
Yeah.
So there's no incentive for a sponsor to really sponsor it. We've seen this in local tours where sponsors do come on board, sometimes a local car dealership or something, but they're doing it very much as a good PR piece, because there's no return on investment, is it? It's not hitting eyeballs. It's not really elevating their brand by sponsoring a tournament. The reason that the big brands want to sponsor football teams or whatever is because it validates their brand. It gets in front of millions of eyeballs. It almost makes your brand seem more authentic and trusted. I remember, silly analogy, but I got a tyre from a car once that was that Yakamoto, whatever it's called, used to sponsor Chelsea, or may still do, I can't remember. And when I got it, I was like, oh yeah, I know that brand. I almost trusted the tyre more because they paid for Chelsea's kit. Which
you might have never heard of that car
exactly
company before.
You know,
that.
And that's why Emirates pay Arsenal however much and sponsor the ground, because then people fly Emirates and it seems more of a trusted brand, I suppose.
Yeah.
So what I'm trying to get to is, on these smaller tours, there's not the incentive for brands to do that, business to do that. And if you're only getting 20 guys, 30 guys turning up who are paying 100 quid, well, simple maths would tell you that's going to be £3,000.
Yeah.
So if there's £3,000, the first guy's getting £1,000.
But also, you've got to factor in like things like green fees and stuff.
Well, that's it.
Because golf clubs are going to be taking green fees for something like this. Because they're effectively shutting the golf course for 2 days.
Well, that's it. So, you give your guy the grand. That takes the price, but potentially down to $2,000 or whatever. You know, I'm sure there's staff there who need paying. So I suppose the only thing is you either pay more as an entry fee, which is even more of a gamble if you pay £500 each, but then obviously you come last and don't get anything. So it's a tough one, really. I understand as an aspiring professional golfer, it must be very difficult to fund that career, and I don't envy those guys at all. I massively respect them to go out and play golf. I mean, that's where I do respect these guys almost more than tour pros, yeah. Because these guys are literally going out trying to pay for the mortgage. That must be, I cannot imagine. I'm a weasel on the golf course anyway. I can hit out of bounds and I've got a half decent scorecard going.
Yeah.
Never mind if I was playing for a mortgage, I couldn't hit the golf ball. So the better golfer than I will ever be.
I'm just looking now online. There's probably about 80 players playing in it. There was a cut after the first day.
Right.
So you had to shoot under +3 to get through the cut. And then, like I say, it was then pretty much everybody, let me just check, did everyone that made the cut get paid? No. So £25 was the least amount of money. So you had to shoot no more than one over par for 2 rounds of golf. You win £25. Yeah, your entry fee was £100.
Yeah, I suppose it is tough, but I suppose then you say, where does that money come from? If there was money in that event, it's either a sponsor, which that's where the money comes from. But if nobody wants to sponsor it, then where does that money... the live money is coming from the Saudi government. They're not going to necessarily want it. They could do as another PR piece, invest in local PGA.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
We're not going to, because there's nothing really for them to do it. So I can see both sides, really. I can kind of sympathise to some degree, but then at the same time, you end these tournaments knowing the risk, don't you?
Yeah, well, I'm just looking now again on the website. It says the prize fund was $7,000.
Well, that would be right then, wouldn't it? Because wasn't it eight? How many people did you say there were?
So first place got 1,100. About 80.
So if it's 100, did you say it was 100 odd pound each?
Yeah, £100 each.
So that's £8,000. So I'm taking the grand has gone out to pay either members of staff or loan the golf course.
Yeah.
So then you're splitting the prize pot fairly, you know?
Yeah, it seems that way. It dawned on me. I just saw it. And I just thought to myself, because it was quite an interesting thread, and I was seeing there was lots of back and forth, exactly what you're saying there. There was people saying, oh, no, that you're only paying £100. How do you expect to make any more money? There's other people going, this is shocking. I can't believe that you're paying 2 rounds of golf for that. These are all professional golfers. And like I say, they've all probably got professional jobs where they've got to take time off out there being a head pro, and they've got to pay an assistant. It's just, how many different levels of professional golf can continue at such scale? Like you've got the big tours. Tours like this just is what it is, and people just play for the prize money. Does it become a bigger deal? I don't know. I just saw it. I just thought it'd be an interesting point.
The thing is, though, I would say, is the fact that LIV has had an influx of capital, and obviously the tours has no impact on this, because this was still getting played for the same amount of money.
Yeah.
I've got a close friend, Barry Taylor, who was good golfer at this level, who won loads of these events, but still not really enough to massively make a career out of it. And he's now gone on to coaching, which is killing it in coaching. Still plays the odd thing here and there.
Yeah.
But it's kind of, I suppose it comes down to individual. If you're good enough, you would progress through the tours. The tough thing is some people don't have that backing to take that plunge. it's like football, isn't it? You've got the Premier League where they earn eye-watering money. You've got right down to the non-league where the professional footballers earning like 30 grand a year, which is a good salary for the average person, I guess. But for a professional footballer, it's not what you think of, is it?
No.
So
I've been watching that kind of This Is Welcome to Wrexham, and they were talking about the salaries on that.
Living in shared houses.
Oh my God, like these are supposed to be professional footballers playing for a team that I know.
Yeah, yeah.
Wrexham is a team that I know, and they're earning, you know, they're just about getting by and, like say, sharing houses and everything else. They're not pulling up in big Range Rovers, and they've got, you know, the trophy wife, and you know, it's just very.
Do you know the guy in question? How?
So he was from Southport and Ainsdale. Peter Scott is called.
Is he a younger guy or an old?
No, he looks. Let me see if there's much on his profile. I've not really messaged Peter to try to discuss this.
Well,
funny enough, by the looks of things, he actually doesn't do bad a lot of the time. This is probably one of his worst place finishes by the looks of things. Normally, he's in the top 10 most tournaments.
I think, my other kind of sympathy for guys like, I'm guessing him, is that they're probably at a strange level of golf. Well, let's just say I decided tomorrow to lose my amateur status and turn pro, right? Which anybody can do.
Yeah.
And I said, right, I'm going to start playing in North Region events or whatever it might be. And I'm going to pay the entry fee and I'm going to play in them. I wouldn't make a penny because I'm not good enough.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't take long, unless I had some backing of somebody, where I go, right, I'm not making any money. I can't pay my bills, right? There's other guys, obviously, in the European Tour, DP World Tour, whatever, who are making squillions. But guys maybe like that, who are kind of, some weeks they might win, and 2 days' work gets them a grand for playing golf. But then equally, they might then come not as high up. It must be a strange place. You don't want to just stop playing, because 2 days' work to win a grand golfing, it's not bad.
Yeah. He's had a lot of top 10 finishes. Like, sometimes they're just one round of golf, sometimes they're two. He's actually been playing on this PGA Tour since 2011, by the looks of things. 10 years or so on the PGA.
Maybe we should get him on the podcast.
It would be interesting,
wouldn't
it?
Let's get him on. Let's speak to him.
Because there's another friend of mine who I used to go to college with called Chris Hansen, who has been a European Tour player, played in the Open, everything. And he basically quit playing golf because he just wasn't earning enough money. And he's now, after about 3 or 4 years off, not really playing professional golf, he kind of got the bugger back again. He's gone for Q School.
Wow.
And I'd be interested to talk to him about it
I'd be interested to know what's changed in that time. Has he got like, has he been seen like a psychologist, or has his game suddenly improved, or does he think, actually, if I knew what I knew now 5 years ago, it's interesting.
He's playing in Q School now in Denmark, so it'd be good to chat to him after.
Absolutely. Got an email for you, Rick.
Okay.
So, I'm sure most people listening know this, and I'm repeating myself maybe some weeks, but the clubhouse, right?
Yep.
It's a place, it's a state of mind, it's a vibe, innit?
It's an NFT.
It's an NFT, yeah. We're selling the clubhouse NFT. It's only 45 grand, and you can join us. The clubhouse, in its simplest terms, if this is the first ever
45 grand, or listen to every podcast. It's up to you.
You choose. Ideally tell like maybe 4 or 5 friends as well, because that'd quintuple our listenership. But yeah, when you've listened to every single episode of the podcast, you tell your partner, your spouse, you say, this morning I was a nobody, and they go, yeah, I know. And you go, now I'm a member of Rick Shields' clubhouse, and they go, oh my god, no. And you go, yeah,
you know, and you get a pay rise. You're now a nobody.
Yeah. You go to work, you walk in, they go, John, you go, hiya mate, yeah, hi, yeah. They go, had a good weekend. You go, yeah. You go, you've got a 55 grand pay rise. I go, what? They go, well, you're a member of the clubhouse. And they go, yeah. They go, well, there you go, obviously.
It's a secret handshake, though.
What is it?
So
I don't even know the secret handshake.
No, if you go into a meeting, if you go handshake off,
yeah,
elbows off, handshake
knees toes,
off, fist pump underneath fist pump.
Unzip your trousers.
That's the X-ray.
Is that just me?
and then you pinch each other's cheeks and give them a shake. Basically, that's a sign that you're both in the clubhouse.
And then you make them harassment. But anyway, that is a sign. So if you want to join the clubhouse, enter the clubhouse and be a clubhouse member, listen to the podcast. It's that simple. It really is.
People are like, not sure if I want to be.
But we've had
that.
An email from Cole Donovan, which is a cool name.
Really cool.
And the title is, are you ready for this?
I reckon he's a weekend like singer. Artist,
yeah,
do you know what I mean?
After dinner,
ladies and gentlemen, welcome Cole Donovan.
Yeah, So I was trying to think of a song then to sing as if I was Cold Olive, but I couldn't think of a, for that moment, I couldn't think of a single song ever recorded in the history of man. So I just paused. But the title is World's Fastest Rick Shields Podcast Clubhouse Member.
Okay.
Okay, ready for this? It says, Dear Guy and Rick. So he's obviously been listening to the old podcast because that's how you should intro an email. Hi, guys. I am a huge fan of the podcast. Sorry, can I start again? I can't even read an email. Huge fan of the channel. I started watching during the pandemic in 2020 when I started playing golf over quarantine.
Okay.
We hear that a lot. Nothing new there. I've been watching both Rick and Good Good since then. When you released the podcast with Good Good, it popped up on my feed and I listened and I loved the podcast. It's great. I listened for a couple more weeks and heard about the clubhouse and decided I wanted to become a member.
Okay.
Okay. I'm a 24-year-old graduate studying and pursuing my doctorate in physical therapy. And I am away from home on clinical experience for 10 weeks in Florida. And I'm from New Hampshire. I'm down here all alone. I need a way to pass my time. So I decided to go back to episode one and see how fast I could become a clubhouse member.
Wow.
I started on August the 18th and just finished up today. Attached is a spreadsheet showing all of my dates and when I listen to each episode. So it's a spreadsheet, so I've got it up here. So it's got all the podcasts, I'll show it to you.
Imagine if you had a question for every single one.
All the podcasts. It's got the side, the date you listen to them, and the length in minutes, right? So he's worked out, he's listened to the podcast for a total of 9,647 minutes. So 152 episodes, because there was a couple that weren't numbered that aren't like official ones. He started on 18th of August, obviously this year, and finished on the 21st of September, so it's 35 days taken. That takes him to 275 minutes per day, which is 4.59 hours per day, and 4.3 episodes a day. Thoughts?
Get a life.
Oh, wow. Wow. So, just to show the difference, my email back to him was, Guy here, love this, mate. We were talking about this in the podcast, you legend. Rick responds, get a life.
Oh, my God. Well, thank you for the dedication. Oh, my. I almost want to know what he speaks like now. I feel like he would speak
Cole.
Somewhere between us, though.
Hey, it's Cole. It's classy. He wants a pie bomb.
Oh, my God. That's crazy. Well, yeah. We got... That, amazing. Thank you, Cole.
And then just on that, another reason. No.
Do you know this guy has refused to give us his phone number?
Who?
Can I tell you this? Rob.
I don't know who you're talking about.
The email about our mispronunciation.
Oh, right. Okay.
I'll talk about it in a minute. Go
on. So another reason, there's another great email. Again, if you've got an email, people sometimes ask on the Facebook group, whatever, what's the email? I'm going to say it one more time this episode. It's podcast@rickshields.com. The trick is to make sure you're spelling Shields correctly. It's not Shield. It's not. It's not E before I, it's I before E.
Except after C.
Yeah, but I think there's sometimes... I don't know if that's right. Anyway, it's from Connor Udall, I think his name is. Quite a cool name, quite a cool guy. He's giving me a picture of himself, which I can't show on air, I'm joking. It says, Hi, Guy and Rick. Love the podcast and all the videos. I wanted to share my story of my first ever hole-in-one.
Nice.
I've not been playing golf for that long, and it's my first full season of being a member at a golf course. I usually play off the white tees and have started to break 100 more frequently. Very good. Good to hear, Connor. I was driving to the golf course when I realised the podcast had finished, obviously the Rick Shields Golf Show podcast, and I had no new episodes to listen to. I'd finally made it into the clubhouse after 144 episodes at the time. I get to the golf course and I meet my friend in the pro shop. He'd just finished working in the pro shop and we head out to the for a round. On the first tee, I find a neon green noodle golf ball, right?
Okay.
At work, noodle is my nickname. Don't know why, but anyway. Long and soft. That's what the slogan used to be.
Oh, you just add hot water to it.
He said, "Mister, could be more signs of a good day." So basically, Connor, he's rocked up to the golf club. He's made it to the clubhouse. So he's feeling like...
He's swagging, isn't he?
He's feeling like $1 million. And then he finds a golf ball. There's green golf ball, which is a weird colour for a golf ball, I must add. Green.
Yeah.
Hard to find. But it's a noodle.
He found it, though.
He found it, and it's a noodle. His nickname's Noodle. Nudes, I call him. That sounds weird. Anyway, so I'll get there in a second. We make it to hole 5. It's a par 3, which is right at the bottom of a mountain called Mount Currie. 150 yards to pin into wind. My buddy asks, what am I thinking? I told him, I'm going for a 7-iron, I'm aiming at the tree, 8 foot right of the pin. It's going to draw back and hopefully run up to the pin. The strike was pure. My friend sees it draw back and roll up to the pin. I thought it was long, but my friend's face told me something different. It went straight into the hole. The neon green noodle golf ball I found the first tee is in the cup. Keep up the great work. And he sent us a picture of him, Connor Noodle, this amazing hole. We'll put this in the podcast if you're listening. Go watch it. A lovely hole, mountain. He stood there with his noodle.
Legend.
And that day, he got into the clubhouse.
Wow. So he went celebrate.
Imagine the scenes.
It wasn't soft and long. Noodles.
But anyway. What was it? So that's some of the emails we're getting. Good quality of emails at the minute. So please keep them up. And we still appreciate the clickbait titles. It does help. So,
let me lower the tone.
Go on then.
Email from Robert S. You guys have off this old guy.
We have to mute that now.
Yeah.
No, it'll be fine.
Hi, Rick. That. Been a subscriber for years. Both channels. But sadly, and very, very sadly, I have unsubscribed from both. Why, you might say.
Why?
No, I didn't say why. I thought, okay, bye. Well, it is not the content, really. It's just you and Guy behaving like numpties.
Wow. Okay? We do some immature things. Numpties.
Numpties, you got to be thinking, you know, maybe driving a... If we drove a golf buggy, flipped it over a bunker, set it on fire, that's been a bit of a numpty.
You know what I think a perfect numpty is? Someone that you see at the traffic light and they drop like a can of Coke or a bottle out the car window. Yeah. What a numpty.
What an absolute numpty.
I would say stronger, but if we were in the car with your kids in the car, we might go, what a numpty.
What, and then you wink at me, but numpty means...
And then I text you and say,
I have to real swear beat this out this time. Right, okay? So we are behaving like numpties. Well, that is why Rob has unsubscribed from both channels.
Well, I'm very intrigued as now to know what we've done.
What numptiness we have done.
Yeah, it must be severe.
Now, you spelt this incorrectly. I just want to note this. You K's, I think it means guys.
Okay.
You K's are British, ? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, not a capital Y, misspelling again. But you can't even say this word, okay? I don't want to say, you can't say the word, I can't even say that. You can't say amateur.
Okay.
Okay. Right. And it really bugs me. We are not Americans. And he sent a YouTube video with the correct pronunciation. We don't use American English. Sorry, but I won't be back until you learn to do it right.
So we say amateur for someone that's not a professional.
I know, silly old English British guy, retired, but I'm sticking up for our country, right? Country now being Americanized.
I don't get the fact that he's been retired as the relevance to this, but...
But, again, not with a capital B. Just want to pull up a few grammar mistakes he's made in this email. Rob.
Wow.
I've got a few issues with this.
Okay.
First off, I've lived on this planet for 36 years. I've probably been speaking now for 34 years. I never knew I was saying the word amateur wrong.
How should it be said?
Amateur.
Amateur. I've heard that word as well.
Amateur. It sounds right, but so does amateur.
Yeah. I didn't know that amateur was an Americanism. Maybe.
I didn't realise it was.
But also, some Americanisms are down to where you live. So, for example, where I am, I don't think you see as much as you, we would say, for trousers, we call them pants. I would always say to my mates, I need some new golf pants.
Right. I'd definitely say trousers. Yeah. And we live 25 minutes apart.
But apparently, pants is the American way. But it must just be... And also, I know in the Midlands, West Midlands, they often say mom instead of, mum.
Yeah.
But mom is a very Americanism. So, I think there's some that just, whatever... Yeah, I don't know. That's weird.
I've got a slight problem with this, Rob. So, I asked for his phone number. So I wanted to ring him, okay? And he replied. It was quite short.
What were we going to ring him and say?
I was just going to, on repeat, say, amateur, amateur, amateur. No, I wasn't. He's just put, no, sorry.
Oh, fair enough.
So he won't even let me ring him to apologise, right? But I've got a slight problem with this. The last line, I've got a few problems with this, but the last line is, sorry, I won't be back until you learn to do it right. But how's he going to learn we've done it right?
Because you email him and say, I've learned to do it right now.
That's why I wanted to ring him.
Oh, very good. Yeah, okay.
Amateur.
So maybe email him a voice note.
But I almost have to think about it. Now, granted, I know in the past I've said performance wrong. I used to say performance. Yeah. Granted.
Was that just something you said? Or
I didn't really know it was wrong. Right. There's another word I've said wrong, and I always have to think about it when I say it. Well, even like Nike.
Yeah.
Before signing with Nike, I used to call it Nike.
Yeah.
And then when I signed with Nike, it was like, you've got to call it Nike.
And you used to call it Leland Scoots, didn't you?
No. I say it the best. Yeah, so amateur. So if anybody right now listening, watching, ever hears me say the despicable, numpty word of amateur again, me or guy, amateur, if we say that word, you've got the right to call us out on it.
Yeah.
Amateur. Yeah. I don't even know if that's right anymore.
We don't like people unsubscribing and unfollowing and disliking. But if you are going to do it, that's absolutely fine. It's your prerogative. But don't feel like you have to email to tell us you're going to do it.
But if you do, it's all right because we make content out of it.
Yeah,
actually, if you want to unsubscribe, tell us the reasons why, and we'll make content.
You know
about
what? As well, I feel like if you
we'll call it unsubscribe.
Weirdly,
corner.
If you unsubscribe and then go to the effort of emailing somebody to say you're unsubscribed, I think you're still more invested than you probably realise you actually are. I think you're still going to watch and listen.
I'm just concerned. How does he know we're going to fix it? I just don't understand how he's going
to
know.
I'm going to keep saying amateur forever.
Anyway.
So we have had some solid Facebook questions from our nice, solid Facebook audience. So again, another reason why you should join the Facebook group is because you will be known as nice and solid. And that could be something you could put on your CV if you wanted to. You could say, or even a reference. So let's just say you've got a good job as a quantity surveyor, but you see there's a rival company, and it's a senior quantity surveyor. You're thinking, right, well, I want to get this job. It's 15 grand a year more, and that would help to pay off the conservatory. So you enter, you write your application at night on your laptop and you think, right, what can I put as a good reference? You put nice and solid and just put Rick Shields underneath it and it'll pass, won't it?
Okay, done.
So I'm going to enter with the first one. It's about me and I'm just going to come in on this hot. Billy Brown, how much does Guy hate LIV Golf? You know what, Billy Brown? I don't hate LIV Golf. We obviously talk about golf weekly, and I don't claim to the biggest know-all about the PGA Tour, the DP World Tour, or professional golf at all. If you're looking for that, you're probably better looking at somebody like No Lane Up, or what's the thing you want? Foreplay Pod. Those guys know what they're talking about. We're just a general vibe. But I definitely don't hate it. I just thought I'd like it more. But I may like it more. We're allowed to change our minds on things. If next year they get these real franchise teams, that could sway me, but who knows? John Carr, regular listener, OG Facebook group member, has said, when is the Rick Shields Golf Performance Centre coming? If not, has this ever been something that Rick has thought about?
The Rick Shields Amateur Performance Centre.
Basically, everyone comes out with a massive snapbook and fats the chips.
Oh, yeah. That's out of order.
I'm sorry.
There goes that business idea. I'd love to do one day, potentially. Watch this space.
I think it's something that you could do.
Put everyone off.
No.
Steve Bruce has put Guy Chan, the legend. We want to see you versus Rick, a full match.
Like a Conway.
But we had one.
We've had one, yeah.
Delamere.
Yeah. I won at Conway, though, so let's talk about the Conway episode.
Wasn't a full match, was it? I didn't even know we were having a match. But
I didn't know.
And we know we were having a match, then it's a
right, okay,
story.
Fair enough.
But yeah, Delamere, we did one. It's on
yeah,
the
we
channel
did.
Now.
We did, I won't say the result. Anthony has said...
And by the way, it wasn't Delamere, it was Dunham.
Dunham
Forest.
Would there ever be a par 2 golf hole? I would love that.
I don't think
it'd have to be very
short.
But imagine that, though. You get let out for long par 5. There's literally a 30-yard hole.
It'd have to be a putt, like just a putt.
That would actually be quite good.
You know, like a massive long putting green, like a 30-yard putting green.
Yeah.
It could be. Tom Bowring... Previously, it's been darts, football, and badminton. What's Rick's current sport obsession?
Yo-yo in.
Do you know what I really want to get interested in? Tennis.
Tennis, do you?
Yeah, I've never, ever, ever, ever played tennis in my life.
It's a lot harder, I think, when I've played it than it looks.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Badminton, you get a bit of time. Even squash. Squash is hard, but I'm rubbish at tennis, so
yeah, bad. I've never played it at school. Never really played it. And I seem to watch quite a bit of it, and I feel like with Federer retiring, I think there might be a hole in the market for me to fill.
I think there could be.
I think there could be a new Federer. Do you know what I mean? I don't feel like, granted, I'm maybe a late bloomer, but I can catch up. I can learn
quick. What would be your vibe? I think, would you like that one who's got like a massive serve, or would you be more of a finesse around the net kind of guy?
Massive serve.
Yeah. Pure ball speed.
And
illegal racket.
Who's the guy that proper loses all the time? I feel like I'd want to also compete with him. online.
I'm curious, head to head.
Drama.
Daniel Long has said, this is a great question, so I've got an exact example of this. What is the best golf club you've owned that you either couldn't get along with or just couldn't hit well? I'll give you mine now. I knew it straight away. When I was younger, my brother very kindly bought me, I can't remember what for, I think it was my birthday or something, a TaylorMade Rescue. When they first relaunched, they were so good. And you could get them from, I think, a 2 hybrid down to like a 6 hybrid. Yeah. I wanted a 2, and he bought me one. I can't remember why he did, but he was very generous of him, obviously.
The orange one or the one with the weights?
No, it was like the new release. No, it was the one that was just black and kind of silver.
Yeah, had like a silver border. Yeah.
And he bought me one, and it was the number 2. And I think it was a stiff graphite shaft, really skinny grip, I remember it. And they were really in fashion. I loved it, but I just couldn't hit it. Literally, I remember like every time I go to hit it, it was low and left. I just couldn't get on with it, but I couldn't take it out of the bag, partly because he bought it for me and partly because I actually loved it. I loved the look of it. Just couldn't hit it. It was very disheartening.
I've had lots of putters that I've loved the look of, but just can't use.
Yeah,
like, I love blade. Proper little blades with a dead skinny grip, but I just can't use it. My hands just don't like the skinny grips. I'm super bladed. It's just not my visual.
It's when you watch Tiger put in or something like that, you think he's got that skinny ping blackout grip. He's just stroke. He's got a little hole in the middle of the face where it's just hit ball after ball after ball. I've got some good questions here, actually, that I think you might have the answer to. So, Rob Watt has said, I have a match play coming up. Can you give me some stories or strategies that would help? That would be awesome.
Match play. I think the old analogies is give putts early and then don't give putts later on. I also really like the strategy of play at the different speed that your playing partner's playing at. So if they're quite a slow player, you play really fast. And if they're quite a fast player, you play really slow.
Yeah.
I've always loved that strategy.
There's one, that is good. There's one I've got that's a borderline gamesmanship. So it depends how you're going to go with this. But one I read years ago is actually quite good. Maybe it's only should do this if you're playing at your home club with someone who's also a member there. Because if you're playing a visitor, like in a club match, this is a bit naughty. But say if there's like potentially a par 3 and it's a little bit wind into, pull out, if they've got the honour, so they're about to hit off and they're looking, pull out your 3-wood or something and they're going, what the hell is in 3? That wind must be strong. And next thing they go, well, I'll go with a hybrid. You tonk it over the green and then you get your 5-iron out. It's very naughty, and I wouldn't recommend it if someone's not from the golf club.
It's perfect.
But it's one that works.
Do it on blind holes. You know, if really it's a 3-iron off the tee off a blind hole, pull your driver out if it's not your honour.
Again, there's a line with that. If you've got a member coming from another club and you're saying hit over them trees, which is the wrong line, that's a bit naughty.
No, do it.
You know, one thing I did as a junior, I've never told this story before, it's a massive regret of mine. It's borderline cheating at golf.
Oh.
And I've never told this story, and I'm going to say it now on a... So when I was a junior, I was in the junior match play, right?
Yeah.
And I think I was about 13 or 14. I didn't ever cheat at golf. I was very much strong about the rules. And if my ball went out of bounds by a foot, it was out of bounds by a foot. Even if no one was looking, I was dead by it. And I was on this hole playing against this lad. I think I was either drawing the match, but I should have beat this lad. I think I did. Well, I did win in the end. And he was a lad, without being real, I should have been beating. And he hit this.
You did win in the end by cheating.
I won in the end. And he hit this tee shot. I just can't even say this now, but it was 16 years ago or so. And he then hit a provisional because we thought his first one would be gone. We looked for a while and we didn't see it. And then I saw his first ball, but didn't tell him. And then he had to play his provisional. And it's lived with me to this day.
Wow. How do you feel about getting off your chest?
I'm ready to get destroyed in the comments and I deserve it.
How long have you been looking for the ball, though?
Oh, it was intact because it was five. Was it five minutes then? It was well within the 5 minutes. But it was in like some quite long rough, but not stupid long rough. It's one of those weird ones where you could either see it really easily or just not see it, just the way the grass was sat.
Oh, my God.
And literally, I think it was 2005 or 6. So I would have been 15 or 14. So it was a long time ago now. Wow. You know, many.
What about for the guys listening?
I apologize. I remember thinking it doesn't feel like cheating as such because even though it is technically in a way, it's not like I've dropped the ball myself. I just won't say anything. I just go mute for a minute. So I walk past the ball, didn't see nothing. And then, yeah, you had to play his provisional ball and end up winning the match. So anyone out there, don't do that. That is just downright awful. Wowzers. How do you feel about that? I think you could have done tricks like that.
A little bit sick.
Okay.
I just used to go in and go and look for it, but my eyes shut. Can't see it anywhere. No, they can't see it. Sorry, time's up. We've got to move on.
You know, I heard once actually about a cheating story. There's a guy at my golf club years ago. I can't actually remember who it was, which is probably good. And he was a bad cheat, apparently. And what he used to do was go out early in the morning with seniors, right? and he would hit it obviously miles further than them, because he was quite a young bloke. But then he'd walk up, and it's a hilly golf course, my course, so he'd walk fast and then prefer his line. There was once on this par four, he hit one apparently like well through the green, and the club owner was onto what he was doing, so he hid in the trees. This guy hit one, it went straight through the green into the trees. He bounced up and just dropped the ball in the hole.
Obviously, in the hole? Obviously planned not it. Not even just on the green?
In the hole. It obviously planned it all. I was like, yeah, I got an eagle too. And the club, and then the club owner was literally watching him. I think he got kicked out.
Oh my God.
But I don't get the lengths the people would go to.
In the hole?
But do you not think though, sometimes the most elaborate, like, fakes,
it's almost believable. You can't fake that.
Exactly.
But don't forget, we heard that story only a few weeks ago about the guy who got a hole in one who didn't. The
well,
guy
that was true.
But he didn't
fake it.
In theory, cheat. Oh my goodness, what a crazy world we're living in.
I've got two more for you. Robert Gilbert has said, how do you fall back in love with golf? Last time I played, it was my worst ever round and I haven't had the courage to play since.
That's a great question. Do you know where I fall in love with most golf? And this sounds like a stupid place where I would fall in love with golf. But like, you know, the little par three course we used to go to?
Yeah.
I love just going there sometimes and falling out of golf. A couple of clubs, mm-hmm. sunny evening, not really counting the score, but just out there in your own
getting
thoughts.
Getting some backspin.
Just enjoying a bit of, take a couple of golf balls. If you hit the first one crap, don't worry, you got another backup. Like,
I bet you're in shorts. I'm visioning.
Very much in shorts.
Yeah. Maybe pencil, a round neck tee.
Pencil bag when I don't really need a pencil bag, because I've only got three golf clubs.
It's actually better than holding them.
Yeah. There's no one out there. Maybe listen to a podcast.
Luke
maybe listen
sport
to this.
In the bag, maybe.
Luce Sport. Maybe a couple of cheeky bifters. No. Bifters, by the way, are cigarettes over here, but no, I'm only joking. If I come find a quiet corner and cry, a little bottle of whiskey. but yeah, I feel like that, if I was to ever really, really struggle, I'd almost go back to that and just go, like, this is golf to me. Do you know what I mean? It's not about score. It's not about trying to get it around a really challenging golf course. It's about just vibing and chilling. And
I like the vibe.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It is like that, isn't it? Even not with somebody else, like, because if somebody else is there, it becomes a match or a judgment or something. Just going out on your own, a little par three course, or even if you went to your own golf course, a couple of golf clubs, a couple of balls, vibe it around.
And you enjoy it, and you go in your bag to get a tea, because you just snapped your last tea, and as you go in your bag, you find a Kit Kat Chunky that you forgot was there from like 4 weeks ago. And you're like, this is just couldn't get any better. last one I've got then, it's from someone whose first name, I don't know if it's a real name, so sorry if I don't read your name out, but it looks like one of those things. You know when someone's like a teacher and they'd like have a, I don't know if you've seen this before, where they kind of jumble up the letters of the name, so it's not really, so it's, you can't search for him, but his surname's Graham, so I don't quite know. Anyway, Graham, I'll call you, has said, really struggling to find motivation to practice golf. I live literally a 60-degree wedge from the first tee at my local 9-hole course. Just to interrupt that question, I love, this is one thing I love about golf, I've had this loads of times, we explain the distance of something by a golf shot.
Yep.
How was your holiday job?
Driver wedge.
It was bloody brilliant. I was like, yeah, we were on this resort, right? There was a bar, lovely. It was a 7-iron from the beach. No more than a 7-iron.
Perfect. Even into wind. Yeah.
Perfect, I love it.
You know exactly how far that is as well, don't you?
150 yards. And then he says, so 60-degree wedge from the first tee at my local 9-hole course, which has a practice ground. So he's literally 80 yards away. I just cannot get myself out there. Any tips on finding the motivation to practice rather than tee up and play? So basically, it looks like he enjoys his actual golf, but he can't really bother practicing. What tips would you give him to find his motivation, or can you help him? Is that something he's got to find from within?
Go and find a top tracer driving range.
Oh, wow.
Hey?
Wow.
You know, have a bit of fun, vibe it, go along his drive. Go and play St. Andrews, just because you can on top tracer.
You know what I think he should do? Go to Trafford Golf Centre, right? Treat himself, walk up the stairs, see the Rick Shields mural, take a picture with it. Why not? The competition's closed now, but still take a picture with it.
Why not?
Send it to Rick. Next thing, Rick shares your story. Ooh, nice, right? You walk into American Golf, see some Lyle Scott. You see a polo. You think, you know what? I've worked hard this week. I'm going to buy myself a Lyle Scott polo. You buy that. You go to the range. You buy 40 balls.
Oh, you need something to wear on your feet.
Okay, so you're thinking, well, I've come in my trainers, I do like these trainers, but I want a bit more traction, I want a bit more stability, but I also prioritise comfort.
Comfort over everything.
Comfort, but I'm also very, very keen on a waterproof shoe. Ideally Gore-Tex, I don't want my feet getting wet. I love playing good golf. I want to play elite golf. I want no distractions, nothing to put me off a game. So you walk up to the footwear stand, you see the Echo, you try them on, you're a UK 9, you try on the 43, it fits like a glove. The comfort is unparalleled. You think, actually, My trainers are comfy, yeah. My Adidas Ultra Boost. But they're not a patch on these. If anything, I'm going to bin my trainers. Because these now, and my golf shoes and my trainers in one. So I've saved money, if anything. You then walk to the range, you buy your 40 balls. At Trafford, top chasers included, as it is at many ranges.
Many.
You're paying a bit more for your balls. Yes, you are. But the good quality balls, and you're getting top tracer. You walk onto the range, you're hitting balls. You're piping it, you're striping it.
And you know what you think? I fancy nine holes around a golf course in St. Andrews, but potentially not the old course.
Okay.
So I'm going to go 9 minutes out of town and go to the Duke's golf course. I'm not sure if it's on top tracer.
If not, but golf course is.
Jumping on there, go, I'm going to play a little nine holes. And you finish and you go, I've played really well there. I feel fresh in my Lance Scott, my Echo shoes. You've got your Garmin watch on. You're flowing, you're cruising. And you go into the cafe and have fish and chips and load it full of ketchup.
And next thing, Guy Chanet walks in.
Done.
And you think, well, oh, I've come to the range. I've got a picture of Rick Shields mural. I've got my Echo shoes. I've got my Lance Scott top. I've got my Garmin watch. I've hit 50 balls on top tracer at the old course or Duke's course if Duke's course is on there. And then Guy walks in and you go, hiya, Guy. I go, hiya, mate. And he goes, where's Rick? I go, he's just here. And then Rick walks in.
And he goes, oh my God, lads, I am top of the long drive leaderboard. See if you can do it and tweet me later. We go, oh, yeah, not a problem. In fact, watch your Twitter and your Instagram. We'll follow you straight away
and
right
now.
And
then you say, in fact, I'm not doing anything tonight. You're not doing anything. Let's stay with him, right? Next thing, we all do long drive together. We all ring our wives. We divorce our wives instantly. We then get a bachelor pad in Manchester, the three of us. Go for a pizza.
We go and get a holiday home in St. Andrews. Oh. In fact, we just get a family room in the Old Course Hotel.
I think I want this guy in my life.
What's his name again? Graham.
Yeah. Next thing, Graham's on the podcast in the middle.
And if that doesn't motivate you to play more golf, nothing will.
Yeah. On that note,
sometimes you've got to find the motivation within.
That's going to be worth 5 stars on Apple, aren't it? If you're into rating podcasts, be that guy or girl.
He's proper gone with us. He's sobbing his heart out. He's lost love for golf, and that's the answer he gets. But that's the answer you expect to get from a podcast like this.
Absolutely. So if you want to rate us on Apple, give us 5 stars. And if you don't, get lost. You're deleted from our lives. Talking rubbish now.
And if you do give it 1 star or unsubscribe, make sure you email. We want to know why. Because then we'll make a story.
After now, after that.
Right. Thanks for listening, everybody. Really appreciate it. This might come out on air. I feel like Matt's got a lot of editing on this one.
Yeah, he really has. He's got all day, though.
Either way, enjoy it, guys. Thanks for everyone listening.
Swear one more. To Cole,
you've got this is a new one to put on the spreadsheet. Again, please go and seek advice. Go and find a girlfriend. Do something with your life, because I'm worried about you, Cole.
Can we have one more swear word for Matt to bleep? Tits.
Peace. Did you? You f***. You have to do that one now. See you in a bit.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.